So those of you who've attended our IRC retreats know that usually, not always, but usually we have a theme for the retreat. And this for this week, Greg and I chose the theme of the paramis. This is a list of beautiful qualities of mind. The word parami means perfection. And it is said to be, this list of qualities is said to be the qualities that the Buddha perfected over the many, many lifetimes before he became the Buddha. And so they're basically the qualities of heart and mind that create the foundations for us to be in a place where we can let go enough to feel this complete freedom, this place of non-resistance, this place of non-reactivity, a place of not being buffeted around by the winds of the world. And so these qualities are both, and I'll name them here first, they are giving or generosity, ethics or virtue, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, determination or resolve, loving kindness, and equanimity. So these are the qualities that the Buddha is said to have spent lifetimes cultivating and perfecting before he finally reached the place where his heart could fully let go. And so they're qualities that in some ways are, they both set the stage for our heart to let go. And they naturally strengthen as we cultivate wisdom and mindfulness, as we practice and begin to look at our experience from this perspective of what's happening right now, what is the experience of being a human being experiencing this in this moment, rather than having our orientation or perspective be around, this is happening, how can I fix this or change this, I'm frustrated, what can I do or how can I convince somebody to be doing something else, as opposed to being involved in the story or the perspective of the whatever it is that's arising, often reactivity. Instead of being involved in that, there's the curiosity. What does it feel like to be a human being that's feeling frustration? What is it like to be a human being that's experiencing calm or ease or peace or happiness or anger or confusion? So that's the kind of shift of perspective we bring to our practice. And as we do that, as we sit in the middle of our lives and watch our humanity, watch what it means to be a human being from the inside, these qualities are also naturally opening up. So in a way, these 10 paramis are both descriptions of what a person who is awake, how they are in the world. We could say they're the qualities of an open heart. And they're also the qualities we cultivate to help open our hearts. So they serve these two purposes. We won't be talking about all of them, because there's only six nights to the retreat. We decided we would just emphasize a few of them. But we thought we'd pick some of those qualities that really will support us here on retreat. Pick qualities of both wisdom and compassion, both the wisdom side of the practice and the heart side of the practice that we'll talk about and explore this week. Another beautiful aspect of these qualities, of these paramis, is that if we pick any one to kind of orient about, just decide, oh, I'd like to work on patience for a while, or I'd like to work on generosity for a while, see what it means to try to open my heart through offering of myself. Any one of these, I think partly because of the way the practice works, if we turn to any one of these to kind of orient towards and focus on, all of the others are going to come along for the ride. And so just as an example of this, if we decide to allow a cultivation of generosity of heart, that, you know, offering of ourselves to be the orientation of our practice, as we do that, we're cultivating this quality of letting go, of renunciation. The word renunciation, maybe when I named that one as a beautiful quality, some of you thought, don't know about that one. I know for myself this word, I think the word renunciation has a bad reputation in our culture, at least. And yet what it is really pointing to here in the practice, it's a simplification of heart and mind. It's a letting go. You know, the word letting go, I heard some of you mention that an aspiration for your practice this week is a letting go. And renunciation is another word for letting go. So this quality of renunciation we are cultivating is that of letting go. And it also is about recognizing that the way that we've habitually looked for happiness in our lives has been about acquiring things. And so renunciation is about asking the question, is this acquiring really what's making me happy? Is this acquiring really the way to a true happiness? Or is there something else that's more profoundly supportive of happiness? And so this quality of renunciation is cultivated through the act of generosity, because in the act of generosity, whether it's our resources or our own time, we are offering something of ourselves and we're letting go of something to make that offering. And so in the very act of generosity, this quality of renunciation, of letting go, is cultivated. Another one, the quality of energy. Energy is said to be that, in terms of a parami, energy isn't just any kind of energy. It's really the energy that's directed towards the practice. It's the energy that's directed towards freeing our hearts. It's this energy directed towards noticing what it's like to be a human being, noticing how it is to be a human being that's engaged in living, not following our thoughts so much, or not orienting around the thoughts being how we find truth in the world, but rather looking at, what's this? And so with generosity, if we are really present for generosity, when we're engaged in giving, we start to see that there's a beautiful energy that directs us to connection with others. And so the act of generosity begins to cultivate this, both a relational quality with other people, other beings, that gives us some energy. But also it cultivates this energy of joy when we give something with our heart without trying to hold on to it. It releases a beautiful joy in our hearts. And so this gives us some energy. And so generosity cultivates this beautiful energy that orients us back to the practice, orients us back to this perspective of looking at our human experience. And patience. We cultivate patience with all of these qualities. Any one of them that we pick to turn our attention to, we'll quickly see how hard it is, how much patience we need with ourselves around where we get stuck, where we get caught. In generosity, there's times when it's hard, times when it feels like I don't want to give that time. I don't want to. I want to do something for me here. And so we get to watch our constriction around generosity. We get to see how hard it is. And rather than collapsing or giving in, we kind of open to and acknowledge, yeah, it's hard. Can I be patient with myself and not beat myself up, not be angry with myself about how hard it is, but rather just have a gentle persistence, which is an aspect of patience, a gentle persistence to keep trying. Keep trying. And this brings in the quality of wisdom, another of the paramis, because we do, in generosity, need to engage in some discernment. Not only to look at, you know, offering, but is this offering something that is skillful? Is this something that... When the Buddha talked about giving, he said we shouldn't give so that it adversely affects ourself or other. So not adversely affecting others or ourselves. And so this is some discernment we touch into. And so wisdom is also cultivated as we practice generosity. So all of these paramis, all of these qualities begin to be cultivated. I actually did the exercise for myself to go through all of the paramis and said, how does cultivating generosity cultivate these other ones? And I found a way in every one that they're connected, that they're interwoven, that they support each other. And so we don't have to think about them as being separate. But we can orient in through one or the other doorway. And then be curious about what happens and maybe become aware that some of these other qualities are coming in, of generosity, of patience, of wisdom, of energy, of love. How much love there is in giving, the connected quality that can come. So we're going to be exploring these qualities this week. And one thing I'll point out here is that we can say there's roughly, you know, two ways that we can be deepening around any wholesome quality of mind. And one is that we begin to recognize it actively. We notice when the quality of giving is there. We notice when the quality of patience is there. When we are doing an activity of, you know, washing dishes or something, we may recognize that right in that activity, there's a sense of generosity. I'm really going to scrub these dishes carefully so the dishwasher doesn't have to do it a second time. So feeling that sense of giving to another person, right there, if you can recognize that, as we recognize these qualities in our hearts, that strengthens them. As we can see, as I started by talking about this practice being around recognizing the experience of being a human who's having these states. So I talked about, so what does it feel like to be a human being that's feeling frustrated? And what does it feel like to be a human being that's feeling generous? When we can touch into that, when we notice, oh, patience is happening right now, or a feeling of connection, of love is happening right now, or a feeling of generosity is happening right now, that strengthens that capacity in our hearts and in our minds. And so it's a beautiful thing to recognize when these qualities are present. And that's one way that we cultivate them. Another way in is one that we will be exploring a lot this week, too, because so much of the time as we're noticing what's happening, we're noticing stinginess or disconnection or impatience. And the other way in to cultivating these qualities is to be open to noticing what's in its way. Impatience is arising. Not how do I get rid of the impatience in order to feel patience so I can cultivate patience, but the very opening to impatience creates the conditions for us to understand something about impatience. And the understanding, that wisdom there, begins to turn the mind in another direction. Helps the mind let go of the impatience. And so another way in to cultivating these beautiful qualities is to notice what's in their way without judgment, but just, oh, okay, this is what it's like to be a human being that's feeling impatient. And right there, we're bringing a quality of heart that heads us in the direction of these beautiful qualities. So really, these qualities are they naturally come along as we practice, and yet we can also support their coming along as we begin to recognize them and begin to see what's in their way. And so over the course of the week, we'll be exploring both sides of this. This process of looking at our humanity creates understanding in some very surprising ways. And so, kind of being along for the ride, being curious about what's happening now. Can I meet this, whatever it is? And one of the qualities of the paramis that really sets the container or the ground for our practice together in community is the quality of sila. And a quality of trust, of confidence in what we're doing. And Greg is going to talk about that right now.
Anybody need to stretch your posture, please be welcome to do that. takes a lot to make it to a retreat like this, doesn't it? No matter what. It's a lot to get here sometimes. Is the sound actually on?
I just turned it up a little.
Okay. Is that all right? Can you hear me okay? Not too loud. Andre mentioned that we had looked over some of the, all of the sheets that we got with your sort of your registration sheets, and that was a first retreat for for a few of you. And I'm wondering if there's anyone who's never meditated before, who's here having never done any meditation. Is that true for anyone? Anyone willing to admit that? I learned to meditate on a 10-day retreat. I showed up not having ever done any at all, not even a second worth. So I was just curious because you start somewhere. I had a friend, I was business partner, a friend of mine who used to go off on these retreats once or twice a year. And I said I was interested in learning how to meditate. And she said, well, here, sign up for this retreat. So, yeah. It was a trip and not easy, but it was, it was totally transformed my life. And it set me on a completely different path in my life that I had no inkling of that. It's very interesting to see that change. And it came at the timing of it was particularly, was such that I could completely change the direction of my life. It was, the timing was that way for me. There's a word there's a language that you're going to hear some of you are familiar with it, but for some of you it's new. And I know, it's guaranteed I'm going to use some words from this ancient language called Pali. It's spelled P-A-L-I, and it's very closely related to Sanskrit. And the tradition that we draw these teachings from is called the Theravada tradition, and that word means way of the elders. And it's the earliest teachings that we know of from the historical Buddha, who lived close to 2,600 years ago. And that language exists as a vehicle for these teachings. They've come to us through that language. And so we'll use some of those words because they're actually very good. But just to warn you about that. And there's one of the words that I love in that language. It's called ehipasiko. And it's a word that is used as part of the reflection of the qualities of the teachings of the Buddha, Dhamma. It's called Dharma in Sanskrit. And that word ehipasiko, a lot of words in this language are combined from, longer things are usually combinations of shorter words. So the word ehi means come. And when the Buddha was first offering for people to enter into that renunciate life of a nun or a monk, he would say ehi bhikkhu or ehi bhikkhuni, come. It's gotten much more complicated now, but he used to just say come. And the pasiko, that pasiko part is the same, is related to the pasa in vipassana, and it means to see. It has to do with seeing. And so this word ehipasiko means come and see for yourself, basically. Which is, I love this word because it points to something really essential in anything that we're going to offer this week and anything that is offered in this realm of these teachings, which is this invitation to explore it and see for yourselves. So there's never anything in this that is a question of a belief or something that you have to, a philosophical stance or something like that, that you have to somehow adopt or take on. It's always offered in this invitation. It's offered and you're to see for yourself. And the Buddha stressed this throughout. He said, you check it out for yourself. You don't believe me or anybody else just because we have a lot of, speak well and seem to have a lot of learning or have memorized a lot of texts or anything like that. So that's the spirit of what we're offering this week, is in this spirit of come and see, ehipasiko, come and see for yourself. Check it out for yourself. So we're going to do a little bit of chanting in this language, which some of you are familiar with, it'll be maybe new for some of you. As a kind of, we're going to use a bit of a ritual thing to kind of enter into the retreat in a formal way, and also to create a kind of retreat container. And there's something kind of powerful in giving voice in as a group, and kind of touching into and speaking from a place of our aspiration and intention in living as a community, and in this journey, this exploration, this intention to cultivate wisdom and understanding and compassion. And that's what we're up to here. So this idea of creating this place of a kind of retreat container, a sort of kind of a sacred space, you could say, is really it's kind of a remarkable thing that happens. And there's a way that that we do create a special place here for this time through our shared intention, through our entry into this noble silence. The support that we offer through our service here in all of us. This whole place, you know, the generosity that Andrea spoke about, this is running on that. So obviously and so clearly, because if we didn't do our part, it wouldn't happen. We couldn't do it. So it's this foundation in that way. There's going to be some stuff here, you know. I was just teaching, I just came from a place called the Insight Meditation Society, teaching there, and flew here from there. And there's some things that can seem kind of Buddhist, this funny old language, and we have this kind of statue here. And you'll see me doing this, and you may see me bowing. And I've spent a lot of time in countries where when you bow to these things. And I just want to, for anybody who's a little leery about becoming a Buddhist, that is not happening to you. And nobody here has an agenda about anyone becoming a Buddhist, whatever that is. The Buddha was not a Buddhist, so that's a good thing to remember. I'm not sure what a Buddhist is, but the word Buddha, I'll say more about this in a moment, but that word comes from a root that means awake. The word bud, bodhi, that word means awake. So a Buddhist, you could say, is an awakist, and I'm down with that. We could all decide that we're going to be awakists here for the week. You know, that's what that means, literally, that word. So this chanting starts out with some words that are homage to the blessed, noble, and perfectly enlightened one. Homage to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhasa. That's, and we'll chant this homage. So that maybe the historical Buddha has some meaning for us as a symbol, right? It's like this statue. You know, if one were to bow to this or to show it respect, this position of the hands like this is called the Anjali Mudra. A mudra is a gesture. Anjali means respect. And it's said that this prayer position here at the chest, that it's supposed to be a symbol of a lotus bud, which I love that idea, because a bud is a thing that might flower and open. And this posture is said to be a gesture of respect. And if one were to bow or show that to any one of us, because I'll bow to you and to this, it's interesting to think what we might hold as being worthy of respect in the world, in our own heart. So if we bow to this statue here, it's not this piece of metal. And that's a sculpture. I used to work making things like that, only they were, you know, science exhibits, but I know how to make a mold and cast a Buddha statue. I could do that. I have training in that. But so we're clearly bowing to what this symbolizes, and that's obvious. But it's worth really looking at what it symbolizes and what we might hold as worthy of bowing to or worthy of showing respect to in our own heart, in the world. You know, where do we don't think of paying homage. culturally, that's just not on our radar very much. So this is, again, this is this come and see and explore and see for yourself what is it that you might hold as worthy of respect in that way. So traditionally, it's said that we bow to the triple gem. We go for refuge to these three qualities, the triple gem. We bow to Buddha, we bow to Dhamma, we bow to Sangha. That's what this is. And we'll be chanting this. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami. We do it three times. We'll be doing that. You better get moving here. But what is that? So I already spoke about Buddha as awake. So we go for refuge to these things. We bow to these things. In a way, you could say our whole practice, everything we might do in this exploration, is in a way an exploration of this idea of where we would turn to for refuge in an unpredictable and changing world. Where's a place of safety? What is the word refuge? It's like a place that's safe, where we could safely rest our heart. So, refuge in Buddha, I talked about this word meaning awake. So refuge in the Buddha is refuge in the ability to be awake, to wake up to the moment. That is a place of refuge or safety, because it doesn't matter what's happening. We can know right now it's like this. This is the experience, as Andre was saying, of being a human right now. I can be awake. I can wake up. We go to Dhamma, the second, Dharma or Dhamma, refuge in Dhamma. Well, that's Buddha Dhamma, as I said, is the teachings of the Buddha. But the word Dhamma also means something much broader. It's kind of like the way of nature, or the law of nature, or the truth of the way it is, you could say, the way it really is. Again, it doesn't matter what's happening. That the reason that it's a place of safety is because we take our stand on reality, you could say. This is how it is. It's like this. I can know that. I can be awake to the truth of the way it is. Buddha and Dhamma. And then Sangha can be seen in a couple of ways also. There's the Sangha is traditionally those who have followed the teaching of the Buddha and realized what he realized, the noble, the Arya Sangha. But Sangha is what we create by coming together. And there's a beautiful image that I got from a teacher of mine once who talked about Sangha as a marvelous organism that is created through our coming together with this shared intention to cultivate wisdom and love, you could say. Wisdom and compassion. And he used this image. He said it's like a room like this, where there's these different doorways and windows looking into the room. And Sangha is like each of us, we're looking through our own window or door. And that's through our own personal history and all that we've lived through and our perceptions and the way we look at things. And that's individual, and that has its value and validity and truth. But we're looking into a common space, into something that's both more timeless and, you could say, more universal than any one of our own stories. Right? We're looking into something that includes our individual story and also goes beyond that, transcends that in a certain way, you could say. It's more timeless, and that, we could say, we're looking into something that we hold as something that we value and hold as possible for us, the deepest kinds of understandings, this aspiration to really free the mind and heart. So we respect our individual points of view and what's true and real, and we're looking into something greater or more universal than anything. So we're looking into the same room, into that bigger space, that common space. So this is the sense of going for refuge. And then we use this attention to how we're living as a foundation for the sense of safety and security and connectedness, this attention to our ethical conduct or sila. So this is the next part of this chanting is what are called the five precepts, or you could say training guidelines or orientations. And it's basically an orientation around non-harming, trying to live as harmlessly as possible, knowing that we can't live completely without harming beings because we're big and a lot of them are tiny and we don't see them. So it has to, it's an intention, it's our intention, without intentionally harming, without intentionally adding to the suffering in the world through our actions and speech, how we move through the world. This idea of orienting around non-harming and harmony, this is not a little thing. This is maybe the biggest, in terms of the quality of generosity that Andrea spoke about a little bit, this might be the most generous thing one could ever do for oneself and for the world. And if everyone in the world made even a half-hearted attempt to undertake a relationship with these precepts, not a commandment, but a relationship of exploring and seeing what they mean, if everyone in the world even entertained the possibility of that on some level at all, we would have a golden age in the snap of a finger. This is not a small thing to offer in the world. And this gift that we give through this is maybe the greatest gift we could offer to anyone is the gift of fearlessness. That they would not have to fear when they're in our presence. They know that that's a safe place to be and that we have their well-being and best interests at heart. It leads to this. This is one of the most profound gifts we could offer to anyone is the gift of fearlessness. And this is something we can really, we can do this. This is real. It's not just a nice idea. So I'll go through the precepts very briefly and then we'll chant them. We'll speak those in English tonight. The first one is the precept to refrain from killing any living being. We respect the right of all beings to live, even those that we find irritating or that we are so small that we find that we just tend to dismiss them as though their life has no meaning. It's so easy to kill. That we really honor all beings have the right to live. The second one is to refrain from taking that which is not given. And I may speak more, we may both speak more about these, because these can be expanded greatly, but we refrain from taking that which is not given. So we respect one another's belongings here, and we look at how we're using resources, like was spoken about earlier, being careful in our use of water here, for example, taking what we need. Really being careful in this regard. And we use care in how we use things. The third one, for the time that we're here on retreat, is undertaking the training to refrain from any kind of sexual activity of any kind. We refrain from that. So it's a celibacy for the time of the retreat. In our lives off retreat, it's a different wording, and it's to bring mindfulness and care so that we do not harm with this energy. So it's not a moral judgment or anything like that. It's an understanding that this energy is there, it's strong, it comes up very strongly on retreat sometimes, and that's real, and it's really bringing attention to that, bringing mindfulness to that, and how we work with it. Because there's so much connection and good that can come from this energy, and so much harm that can come when there's no mindfulness and when it's acted upon without care. The fourth one is to refrain from false speech. It's not kind of come up a whole lot because we're entering into silence, but it's really looking at ways that we interact and the kind of energy we put out. And when we do speak, when there is a time that we speak with care, we speak what is true and timely and useful and these kinds of things. And we bring attention. You could make attention to speech your whole practice for a lot of lifetimes, and it would lead, I mean, this is huge if we look at speech, you know, and it just, stuff just comes out, and to really look at what's useful in terms of speech. So here it's to refrain from speaking that which is not true and using care in this. And then the final one is to refrain from taking intoxicants and drugs and things that would lead to heedless behavior. Cloud the mind, lead to heedlessness. We're after clarity of mind. So we want to refrain from clouding the mind and taking substances that cause heedless behavior, careless, mindless behavior. This in no way applies to any kind of prescription medication you might be taking. That's not it. But we're letting go of things that do cloud the mind, that would lead to, careless, heedless behavior. And then the end of this chant, we do a reflection on the fact that this conduct of ours is the very foundation and actually the path to freeing the mind and heart. And so that the words of that are, may this virtue of mine help to bring about and support the realization of the path and its fruit. That's how it's worded in this traditional way. So it's a reflection on the power of this in our lives. So we'll do this chanting. Some of you know it, and I'd ask you to bring some gusto in there and help carry along those who don't know it. We'll do it call and response. Don't worry about getting it right. Do your best. If it's just really not something you feel comfortable with, you of course don't have to do it. So I'll do this first part, the Namo Tassa line, once by myself so you can hear it, those of you who don't know it. And then we'll do it three times together. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasa. All together. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasa. This next part is the going to the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha for refuge. It's this reflection in this way of where we look for refuge. And we do it three times. So we'll do it line by line. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi, that means for the second time. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Now we say tatiyampi for the third time, and we'll just do them all together. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. So you can repeat after me for the five precepts. We'll do those in English only this evening. I undertake the precept to refrain from killing living beings. I undertake the precept to refrain from killing living beings. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. I undertake the precept to refrain from all sexual activity. I undertake the precept to refrain from all sexual activity. I undertake the precept to refrain from false speech. I undertake the precept to refrain from false speech. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking intoxicants which cloud the mind and cause heedlessness. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking intoxicants which cloud the mind and cause heedlessness. And then we'll go back to Pali for this last one, which means, may this virtue of mine be the support and cause for my realization of the path and its fruit. And we'll do it, I'll call and response in a couple of parts. Idam me silam, idam me silam, maga palanyanasa, maga palanyanasa, pachayo ho tu, pachayo ho tu. And we can say sadhu three times altogether. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. That word sadhu means well spoken or well done. And it was well spoken and well done. So, yeah, just a couple minutes over our cutoff time, trying to wrap it up early tonight. Does anyone have a job still tonight besides me and her? Okay, good. So, anything that we need to do before we let everyone get settled in and call it a night?
I think mostly just we wanted to end a little early tonight so that you have a chance to get rest. You know, we've both done this a lot, coming to retreat, and it's hard the first day. I mean, you've been traveling, you've been trying to get ready in your lives, and so we wanted to give you some extra chance for rest tonight. And so if you have energy, of course, you're welcome to stay in the hall. You're welcome to sit, get a cup of tea, do some walking, come back and sit. But also, if it feels like rest is what's helpful for you right now, please take your rest. And while tomorrow morning, both Greg and I will be in the kitchen, I'll be teaching him how to make breakfast. So the practice leader will be here, sitting here in this space, at the 6 o'clock sitting, and then subsequent mornings one of us will be here during the morning sitting, and the other of us will be making breakfast. So enjoy your evening, rest, relax.